Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive, plus a couple of, you know, supplementary materials. We're currently working on Words of Radiance, the second book. We're smack dab in the middle of part three. I think we have two episodes left after this in part three, and then we're pretty much on a downhill sprint to the end of the book, I would say. Before we get into this week and all the last weeks and everything, I just want to make sure everybody knows that there's a Discord server. The link to join that is on Twitter. I think it's our pinned tweet. And also it's in the episode description wherever you're listening to this. You guys can also follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Mango.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember what happened last week. So it's been a little bit longer than normal because I was out of town. So we're recording this a couple days later than we normally would, but, if I'm looking here at my notes, yes. So, the big thing, Renarin joined Bridge 4.
Oh yeah. Kind of.
Kaladin is like, you can be a cook. Kaladin learned how to lash himself.
Oh yeah.
He can now walk on walls. What else happened with Kaladin? What Kaladin before we go to Shallan? Kaladin, Adolin, and Shallan all had some the funny haha moments. Where Adolin was like, "I'm a big bad man," and Shallan was like, "You think you're a big bad man?" And Kaladin was like, "I hate you both." And Moash told Kaladin that his grandparents were, in quotation marks, killed by Elokar.
Mm.
Elokar left them in a prison cell to rot, and they died. And that's why he hates Elokar so much, and Kaladin was like, "And that's why you're trying to kill the king?" And Moash was like, shut the fuck up. He's like, "Don't say that right here."
But he was
literally,
like, yes.
Adolin is right there.
Yes, but don't
be quiet. Yeah. And Syl was like, "Cool, we know, let's go get Dalinar." And Kaladin was like, "Maybe we should listen a little bit first." And Syl is like, "Huh?" And he's like, "Let's just listen just a little bit." And they have a whole thing where he's like, yeah, which I think the important part of their conversation is he talks about perspective. And what if there was a Parshendi Surge Binder with their own honor spren? Would them being directly in opposition to me be right because of their own individual perspective, you know? And Syl was like, "That's a lot of human, complicated thoughts, and I'm not really ready for that yet. Maybe let's bond a little bit more, and let me take a little bit of your sentience, and we'll come back to this conversation." I think that's all the important stuff that happened with Kaladin. Shallan met with the Ghostbloods.
Mm-hmm.
She met Marais.
Mm-hmm.
Who is operating in a cellar in Sabariel's war camp, and has a room full of animal trophies and trophies from other planets. So that's weird. Marais was like, "Hey, go break into Amaram's house because he's doing stuff, and we don't like it." Yeah, the only other thing was we had a flashback chapter of Shallan where she met Wit as a child, though she doesn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And Hoid used Allomancy on her.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, ethical implications of that. We're just going to skirt by him. We're gonna not think about that.
We already know he's not the most ethical character, mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a line later in this book that I can't wait for. It sums up his character perfectly, but that was pretty much everything last week. This week, I am excited, but this week, this is, I believe, episode 11. We're starting with chapter 46. It's titled Patriots, and it has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "When Simul was informed of the arrival of the Edge Dancers, a concealed consternation and terror, as is common in such cases, fell upon him. Although they were not the most demanding of orders, their graceful, limber movements hit a deadliness that was by this time quite renowned. Also, they were the most articulate and refined of the Radiants. From Words of Radiance, chapter 20, page 12. So, that's another one of the orders of Knights Radiant, the Edge Dancers, and the novella that we have to do that takes place between this book and book 3 is titled Edge Dancer. I wonder what that means. I'll tell you in a couple weeks. This chapter starts with Kaladin reviewing Bridge 17, and he's telling Pitt, who's been training this bridge, how impressed he is, which is a lie, but it's spoken to motivate. He then goes and checks on Bridge 18, where there are problems with cohesion. Kaladin gives them a motivational speech and decides to split them up if their morale doesn't improve. As Kaladin goes to check on Bridge 19, Syl chides him on working instead of eating dinner. She tells Kaladin that she sees red spren sometimes, and Kaladin thinks there is a connection to the countdown which points to the weeping. Kaladin relents and goes to his barracks for dinner stew. Sitting nearby on a log were not one, but 3 Herdazians. All wore Bridge 4 uniforms, and Kaladin only recognized Punio out of the 3. Kaladin found Lopin nearby. 3? Kaladin demanded. Cousins, Lopin replied. You have too many of those. That's impossible. Rod, Huio, say hello. Bridge 4, the two men said. Kaladin shook his head, accepting his own stew. He peeked into the storage room and found Shen stacking sacks of Talu grain. Shen, Kaladin said. The parchman continued stacking bags. Fall in and attention, Kaladin barked. Shen froze, then stood up, back straight, at attention. At ease, soldier, Kaladin said softly. I spoke to Dalinar Kalin earlier today and asked if I could arm you. He asked if I trusted you. I told him the truth. Kaladin held out his spear to the parchman. I do. Shen looked from the spear to Kaladin. Bridge 4 doesn't have slaves, Kaladin said. I'm sorry for being frightened before. He urged the man to take the spear, and Shen finally did so. Leighton and Natum practice in the mornings with a few men. They're willing to help you learn so that you don't have to train with the green vines. Shen held the spear with what seemed to be reverence. Kaladin turned to leave the storage room. Sir, Shen said. Kaladin paused. You are, Shen said. A good man. I've spent my life being judged for my eyes, Shen. I won't do something similar to you because of your skin. Sir, The parchment seemed troubled by something. Shen is interrupted by Moash, who tells Kaladin to join them at going out. As they walk through the war camp, they hear rumors of war in Yakaved and a new emperor in Aesir. Moash picks a tavern called the Ornery Chull for them to visit, and Pete concurs. The Bridgeman order drinks, and Rock speaks of his homeland and how the Horn Eaters ended up living in the mountains with the help of the gods. It's not just water, Rock said, is water of life. It is connection to gods. If Unkalaki swim in it, sometimes they see place of gods. Kaladin leaned forward at that. Place of the gods? Yes, Rock said, is where they live. The waters of life. They let you see place. In it, you commune with gods, if you are lucky. Rock tells the bridgeman that there are certain details that he cannot divulge, since they are complicated, such as the reason why he can see spren. Rock rolled his eyes. On top is water. Beneath is not, is something else, water of life, the place of the gods. This thing is true. I have met a god myself. A god like Syl, Kaladin asked, or maybe a river spren? No, Rock said. I saw Lunu Anaki. Oh, great, Moash said. Wonderful. Lunu Anaki, Rock said, is god of travel and mischief. Very powerful god. He came from depths of peak ocean, from realm of gods. What did he look like? Lopin asked, eyes wide. Like person, Rock said. Maybe Alethi, though skin was lighter. Very angular face. Handsome, perhaps, with white hair. Sigzil looked up sharply. White hair? Yes, Rock said. Not gray, like old man, but white. Yet he is young man. He spoke with me on shore. Ha! Made mockery of my beard. Asked what year it was by Horneater calendar. Thought my name was funny. Very powerful god. Were you scared? Lopin asked. No, of course not. Lunu Anaki cannot hurt man. Is forbidden by other gods. Everyone knows this. He is talking about Wit. He's talking about
Hoyt. I figured.
Yeah, and he's not, like, yeah, this is, yes. Rock has met Hoyt in the Horn Eater Peaks before. Huh. This is completely true, what he's saying.
But that's not his name. He's mistaking him for someone else.
Well, I think what it is that Hoyt is such a figure that the Horn Eaters have a name for him.
Oh, I thought they were saying that for someone else.
No, I mean, I don't know that this for a fact, I guess, but I read it as this is what the Horn Eaters know Hoyt as, is Lunu Anaki.
He's so weird to them that they consider him a god.
Yeah. He's a weird guy.
And he's already learned powers from other places, so.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And I've said this before, but Rock is absolutely right. Hoid cannot hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
Moash tells Kaladin that the people he wants Cal to meet have arrived, and the two leave to see them in a private dining room. All right, what kind of voice am I going to do for Graves? All right, here we go.
Graves.
So this is the famous Kaladin, one man exclaimed. Storms, but it is a pleasure to meet you. Embarrassing Sadeus while saving the Blackthorn himself. Good show, man. Good show. And you are, Kaladin asked. A patriot, the man said.
Ugh.
Call me Graves. And are you the Shardbearer? Straight to the point, are you? Graves said. Kaladin looked at a woman in the group. I recognize you, Kaladin said. You're one of Dalinar's clerks. She watched him, careful. Danlin is a member of the High Prince's retinue, Graves said. Please, Kaladin, sit. Have some wine. Kaladin sat down, but did not pour a drink. You're trying to kill the king. We are patriots, as I said before. Patriots of Alethkar. The Alethkar that could be. Patriots who wish to murder the kingdom's ruler? Very well. We shall be on with it. Elokar is a supremely bad king. Surely you've noticed this. It is not my place to pass judgment on a king. They dunk on Elokar for a bit. They talk about how he's paranoid and childish. He used to sign just about anything into law if he was sweet-talked into it. He let Sadeus get away with treason. You know, the normal stuff for Elokar.
Yeah.
So you try to assassinate him, Kaladin demanded. Graves met Kaladin's eyes. Yes. If a king is destroying his country, a mercenary said, is it not the right, the duty of the people to see him removed? They talk about how if Dalinar was in charge, things would be much better, and while he does a lot already, he's holding himself back out of respect to his dead brother. So yes, Graves said to Kaladin, we're assassins. Murderers or would-be ones. We don't want a coup, and we don't want to kill innocent guards. We just want the king removed. Quietly. Preferably in an accident. Danlin grimaced. Unfortunately, we have not been particularly effective so far. And that's why I wanted to meet with you, Graves said. You expect me to help you? Kaladin asked. Graves raised his hands. Think about what we've said. That's all I ask. Think about the king's actions. Watch him. Ask yourself, how much longer will the kingdom last with this man at its head? The Blackthorn must take the throne, Danlin said softly. It will happen eventually. We want to help him along, for his own good. Spare him the difficult decision. I could turn you in, Kaladin said, meeting Graves' eyes. Inviting me here was a risk. Graves compares killing Elokar to cutting off an infected limb to appeal to Kaladin's past as a surgeon. You control the king's guard now, Kaladin, Graves said. We will need an opening, a time when no guards will be hurt, to strike. We didn't want the actual blood of the king on our hands, wanted to make this seem an accident, but I have realized this is cowardly. I will do the deed myself. All I want is an opening, and Alethkar's suffering will be over. It will be better for the king this way, Denlin said. He's dying a slow death on that throne, like a drowning man far from land. Best to be done with it quickly. Kaladin stood up. Moash rose hesitantly. Graves looked at Kaladin. I will consider, Kaladin said. Good, good, Graves said. You can get back to us through Moash. Be the surgeon this kingdom needs. Come on, Kaladin said to Moash. The others will be wondering where we got to. He walked out, Moash following after making a few hasty farewells. They let him go. Storms, he thought. I wish their arguments hadn't been so good. How did you meet them? Kaladin asked as Moash jogged up to join him. Rill, that's the fellow who was sitting at the table. He was a mercenary in some of the caravans I worked before ending up in the Birch Cruise. He came to me once we were free of slavery. Moash took Kaladin by the arm. They're right. You know they are, Cal. I can see it in you. They're traitors, Kaladin said. I want nothing to do with them. You said you'd consider. I said that, Kaladin said softly, so that they'd let me leave. We have a duty, Moash. Is it greater than the duty to the country itself? You don't care about the country, Kaladin snapped. You just want to pursue your grudge. All right, fine. But Kaladin, did you notice? Graves treats all men the same, regardless of eye color. He doesn't care that we're dark-eyed. He married a dark-eyed woman. Really? Yeah, Moash said. One of his sons is even a one-eye. Graves doesn't give a storm about what other people think of him. He does what is right. And in this case, it's what he said. Someone has to do it. Don't speak of this to me again, Kaladin said, and don't meet with them again anymore. He sat back down, Moash slinking into his place, annoyed. Kaladin tried to get himself to rejoin the conversation with Rock and Lopin, but he just couldn't. And he's like, storms, what a mess. Chapter 47, Feminine Wiles. It is a Shallan chapter. The epigraph reads, yet were the orders not disheartened by so great a defeat, for the Lightweavers provided spiritual sustenance. They were enticed by those glorious creations to venture on a second assault. From Words of Radiance, chapter 21, page 10. In this chapter, Shallan and Pattern are discussing several maps of Roshar that seem to contradict other maps over the actual historical location of Urithiru. Pattern reads the maps and partially deciphers the Dawnchant language that had mystified scholars for a long time. So this was something that Navani was trying to figure out how to kind of decipher by using Dalinar's visions, because Dalinar is speaking in the Dawnchant, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
But Pattern is apparently just able to do it.
Hmm.
And so he deciphers some of it, and she reads it, and she reads, Urithiru was the connection to all nations, and at times our only path to the outside world, with its stones unhallowed. She looked up at Pattern. What does that mean to you? It means what it says, Pattern replied, that Urithiru was well connected. Roads, perhaps? I've always read the phrase metaphorically, connected in purpose, in thought, in scholarship. Ah, lies. What if it's not a metaphor? What if it's like what you say? Connected, but not by roads. Some of these maps don't have any roads leading to Urithiru at all. They all place it in the mountains, or at least the hills. How do you reach a city if not by roads? Shallan asked. No Adan could walk there, or so he claimed, but others do not speak of riding or walking to Urithiru. She needed more information. She scrambled over to Yasna's trunk, digging out one of her notebooks. She said that Urithiru wasn't on the Shattered Plains, but what if the pathway to it is here? Not an ordinary pathway, though. Urithiru was the city of Surgebinders, of ancient wonders like Shardblades. Pattern said softly. Shardblades are no wonder. Shallan found the reference she was searching for. It wasn't the quote she found curious, but Yasna's annotation of it. Another folk tale, this one recorded in Among the Dark-Eyed by Kalanam, page 102. Stories of instantaneous travel and the Oath Gates pervade these tales. Instantaneous travel. Oath Gates. That's what she was coming here for, Shallan whispered. She thought she could find a passageway here on the plains. But they're barren. They're barren stormlands. Just stone creme and great shells. She looked up at Pattern. We really need to get out there, onto the Shattered Plains. Shallan and Pattern take a carriage to meet Adolin, Gazza and Vata, joining her as guards. They complain that they're bored of just sitting around, and on the trip, Shallan practices her light weaving. She finds that if she draws a sketch of somebody, she can use the stormlight to create an illusion of them. She tests this by sketching Sabariel and forming an illusion of him. She also finds she can reclaim Stormlight from an illusion. She considers trying to form an illusion to make herself more appealing to Adolin, but decides it would be impossible to try and keep that up constantly around him if they married. And that is the end of the chapter. Oath Gates and Instantaneous Travel. Chapter 48, No More Weakness. It is a Shallan flashback chapter. It's 3 years ago. Shallan, Balat, and Wickham are relaxing in the gardens when they hear a carriage arriving at their house. Balat goes to see who it is, and Wickham tells Shallan that what she's been doing has been helping their family. He gives her a bag of dried blackbane that he's been carrying for over a year, indicating that he no longer wants to kill himself, and then jogs off to the house. A short time later, she's interrupted by shouting. When she reaches the house, she finds three men standing before her father and Jushu kneeling on the floor with his hands tied behind his back. Lin says he won't pay Jushu's gambling debts, despite his son's pleas, and tells the men that they can have him. Shallan begs Balat to do something as Jushu is dragged away, but he doesn't know what he can do. Shallan follows her father into his study. The house's ledgers are open, and she can see that they are in staggering debt. Her father tells her that he doesn't have the spheres to pay the men, and commands her confined to her rooms. Crying, she runs back to the feast hall, asking Balat and Wickham for the daggers their father had given them. Then she chases after Jushu and the men. She manages to convince the men to take the daggers and her necklace, which they decide not to keep, in payment of Jushu's debt, though they are only worth about half of it. She tells Jushu, who has been beaten and can't hear well, that Balat and Wickham saved him. She returns to her rooms and waits, hearing the inevitable shouts. Eventually, her father opens the door to her room. She can see the crumpled form of Minara, their serving maid, in the hall. Her arm is broken, and she leaves a streak of blood on the wall as she tries to crawl away. Father entered Shallan's room and shut the door behind him. You know I would never hurt you, Shallan, he said softly. She nodded, tears leaking from her eyes. I found a way to control myself, he said. I just have to let the anger out. I can't blame myself for that anger. Others create it when they disobey me. I would not want to have to punish anyone else because of you, Shallan, father said. This cold monster. Was this really her father? It is time. No more indulgences. If we are to be important in Yaakoved, we cannot be seen as weak. Do you understand? She nodded, unable to stop the tears. Good, he said, resting his hand on her head, then running his fingers through her hair. Thank you. He left her, shutting the door. And that's the end of the chapter.
Okay, maybe she had a good reason to kill her dad. I'm starting to see that.
Maybe, maybe. I have a little bit of an image for you.
Is it of a woman with a broken arm?
No, it's not. Is Azish male fashions? The script reads, "This folio page shows contemporary designs out of Azir, using local models. Though these are specifically male civil servant outfits, the styles have deeply influenced all Azish fashion." Chapter 49, Watching the World Transform, and this has Shallan's symbol. The epigraph reads, "These light weavers, by no coincidence, included many who pursued the arts, namely writers, artists, musicians, painters, sculptors. Considering the Order's general temperament, the tales of their strange and varied mnemonic abilities may have been embellished." From Words of Radiance, Chapter 21, page 10. Shallan arrives at an open-air winehouse to meet Adolin for lunch. Shallan tries to focus on her purpose of allying with House Colin, but is distracted by romantic considerations. Shallan and Adolin flirt for a bit. She asks Adolin to talk about his experiences with Plateau Runs to show interest in him, but ends up derailing the conversation by asking what he does if he has to use the bathroom while wearing shard plate. And he inspected her, narrowing his eyes. "What?" she asked. "Just trying to determine if you're secretly wit wearing a wig. This is something he would do to me." "I'm not doing anything to you," she said. "I'm just curious." "Well," Adolin said, "if you must know, an old adage on the battlefield teaches that it's better to be embarrassed than dead. You can't let anything draw your attention from fighting." So yes. "I, Adolin Colin, cousin to the king, heir to the Colin princedom, have shat myself and shit my shard plate 3 times. All on purpose." He downed the rest of his wine. "You are a very strange woman." And apparently that breaks the ice real well. Because then Adolin goes on to tell Shallan about the upcoming summit with the Parshendi and the political situation in the war camps and all about Dalinar's visions and plans. He's like, "You ask if I shat myself on my shard plate? I'm going to fucking lay it all out on no secrets. Here's our entire fucking thing. Here you go." And then in turn, Shallan tells Adolin all about Yaz's research. She tells him about how the Parshmen are related to the Voidbringers. And she's like, "Do you think we could get rid of the Parshmen from the war camps?" And Adolin's like, "That doesn't sound feasible."
"That sounds kind of racist."
Yeah. She's like, "Because like they're going to turn into evil murdering monsters, so we should probably get rid of them."
That which sounds is very racist, but also given the fact is. That they can literally be turned into murder hobos against their will, also possibly feasible, but still racist.
Yes. All that they know, the Alethi, is that, or at least Shallan, all Shallan knows is that the Voidbringers destroyed humanity for thousands of years over and over and over again, and are possibly related to the Parshmen, might even be the Parshmen. So she is cautious in a kind of fucked up way. In a very fucked up way.
Yeah. We know that
we know that it's more complex than that.
It's mostly against their will.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it worse because it's like, they're correct. They are the ones killing them, but they're not doing it on purpose.
The complexities around the Voidbringers are some of my favorite things that is done throughout this series.
Yeah.
And it will continue to unravel as we proceed. There's still going to be more and more that we're going to learn as we go on. And it's, I think, very well done.
Mm-hmm.
As the high storm arrives, which there's a high storm coming, and Shallan's like, "That's fucking scary." And Adolin's like, "No, this is fashionable to sit and drink wine until a high storm arrives. And then as soon as it's about to hit you, you guys hide in shelters. This is what the rich people do because they're so bored." They're crazy. Kaladin is right. The winehouse area is vacated for the shelters, but Shallan is like transfixed and she's just watching the storm approach, and Adolin is like dragging her, trying to get her to go inside. And Shallan is like, "I have to sketch this." And Adolin is like, "Get inside!" and drags her inside as the doors are closing. Adolin says that he will try to get her permission to go on a hunt before they split up into separate rooms divided by gender. Shallan feels satisfied at her progress despite how unorthodox her methods were, and ignores jealous looks from women as she plans how to sneak into Amaram's house. And that is the end of the chapter. Now for something less pleasant. Chapter 50, Uncut Gems. It has Adolin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "And now, if there was an uncut gem among the Radiants, it was the Will Shapers, for though enterprising, they were erratic, and Invia wrote of them, capricious, frustrating, unreliable. As taking it for granted that others would agree, this may have been, this may have been an intolerant view, as often Invia expressed for this, for this order was said to be most varied, inconsistent in temperament, save for a general love of adventure, novelty, or oddity." From Words of Radiance, Chapter 7, Page 1. This chapter is picks up right where the last one left off, but it is in Adolin's POV, and Adolin is sitting in the storm's shelter, listening to the high storm. He chats with Elit, who vows to win their upcoming shard duel. Sadeus sits down next to Adolin, and he starts to talk. He goes, "Young Adolin, what do you think of my coat?" "I hate you," Adolin whispered. "As well you should. My former property is treating you well. I've seen their like patrolling the market here. I find that amusing for reasons I doubt I could ever properly express." "They patrol," Adolin said, "to create a better Alethkar." "Is that what Dalinar wants? I am surprised to hear it. He talks of justice, of course, but he doesn't allow justice to take its course. Not properly. And I know where you're going, Sadeus. You're annoyed that we haven't been letting you put judges into our war camp as High Prince of Information. Well, I'll have you know that Father has decided to let..." "High Prince of... Information? You didn't hear? I recently renounced the title." "What?" "Yes, I fear I was never a good match for the position. My Shalashian temperament, perhaps. I wish Dalinar good fortune in finding a replacement, though from what I've heard, the other High Princes have come to an agreement that none of us are... suited to these kinds of appointments." Sadeus smiled again. "Do you think me an evil man, Adolin?" "That's too simple a cruel, too simple a term," Adolin snapped. "You're not just evil. You're a selfish creme-crusted eel who is trying to strangle this kingdom with his bulbous bastard hand." "Eloquent," Sadeus said. "You realize I created this kingdom. You only help my father and uncle. Men who are both gone," Sadeus said. "The Blackthorn is as dead as old Gavilar. Instead, two idiots rule this kingdom, and each one is, in a way, a shadow of a man I loved." He leaned forward, looking Adolin straight in the eyes. "I'm not strangling Alethkar, son. I'm trying to, with everything I have, to keep a few chunks of it strong enough to weather the collapse your father is bringing." "Don't call me son," Adolin hissed. "Fine," Sadeus said, standing. "But I'll tell you one thing. I'm glad you survived the events on the tower that day. You'll make a fine High Prince in the coming months. I have a feeling that in 10 years or so, following an extended civil war between the both of us, our alliance will be a strong one. By then, you'll understand why I did what I did." "I doubt it. I'll have rammed my sword through your gut long before that, Sadeus." Sadeus raised his cup of wine, then walked off, joining a different group of Light Eyes. After the high storm ends, Adolin, along with two Bridgeman guards, leave the market. Adolin finds some Bridgemen outside Dalinar's sitting room and glyphs on the wall that say, 32 days, seek the center. Adolin calls for the area to be restricted and for Navani to be summoned. Dalinar determines the glyphs were inscribed with his knife, and Navani says they were probably etched by Dalinar himself. Adolin says he is worried because Dalinar is foretelling, which is something of the Voidbringer, supposedly. They discuss the meaning and decide that they will follow the advice to seek the center of the Shattered Plains in 32 days during the Weeping. They cover up the glyphs and swear the guards to secrecy. And that is the end of the chapter. Sadeus is an asshole.
Yep.
Constantly. Chapter 51, Heirs. And this one has Adolin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "In short, if any presume Kazila to be innocent, you must look at the facts and deny them in their entirety. To say that the Radiants were destitute of integrity for this execution of one of their own, one who had obviously fraternized with the unwholesome elements, indicates the most slothful of reasoning, for the enemy's baleful influence demanded vigilance on all occasions, of war and of peace." From Words of Radiance, Chapter 32, Page 17. Adolin is deciding to attend the summit with Eshrenai in Dalinar's place to keep his father out of harm's way. Adolin rides Dalinar's Rashadium gallant to keep up pretenses as he travels to the meeting with the Parshendi. After Adolin arrives at the designated plateau, the Parshendi arrive as well. Adolin and his scribe, Brightness and Adara, meet alone with Eshrenai, and she shows up. "I am Eshrenai," the Parshendi said. "Do you remember me?" "No," Adolin said. "Not surprising. I was young and unimportant when we first met. Barely worth remembering. And this whole conversation, she thinks that he is Dalinar."
Does she find out he's not?
That would be a spoiler, Mango. But right now she thinks that that's Dalinar. So she's saying that when she was young and unimportant, she met Dalinar. Like a long time ago. We are here, Adolin said, to discuss the terms of a Parshendi surrender. Esh and I laughed. That is not the point at all. Then what? Adolin demanded. You seemed eager to meet with me. Why? Things have changed since I spoke with your son, Blackthorn. Important things. What things? Things you cannot imagine, Esh and I said. We tire of this war, Parshendi, Adolin said. Your numbers dwindle. We know this. Let us make a truce, one that would benefit us both. We are not as weak as you believe, Esh and I said. What do you want? How can there be peace? There will be peace, Blackthorn, when one of us is dead. I came here because I wanted to see you with my own eyes, and I wanted to warn you. We have just changed the rules of this conflict. Squabbling over gemstones no longer matters. She turned to go. Wait, Adolin cried, stepping forward. Why? Why are you acting like this? What is wrong? She looked back at him. You really want to end this? Yes. Please, I want peace, regardless of the cost. Then you will have to destroy us. Why? Adolin repeated. Why did you kill Gavilar all those years ago? Why betray our treaty? King Gavilar. He should not have revealed his plans to us that night. Poor fool. He did not know. He bragged, thinking we would welcome the return of our gods. She shook her head, then turned again and jogged off. Adolin returns to the war camps with his entourage. Adolin broods that he should have allowed Dalinar to go instead, but Dalinar replies that Adolin did well, and that now they can battle the Parshendi with a clear conscience. Dalinar reveals a battle plan to take as many soldiers and high princes to the center of the Shattered Plains during the Weeping to bring an end to the war. Dalinar implores Adolin to fight more duels and says he will try to convince neutral high princes to join the expedition. And that is the end of the chapter.
That's not what they wanted, Dalinar.
So
apparently Gavilar mentioned something about wanting to bring the gods back, and so that's why they killed him.
Yeah, supposedly he bragged about it to them, and so they killed him. And our last chapter for tonight, kind of a longer one, but a satisfying one, I think. Chapter 52, Into the Sky. It has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, Now, as the Truth Watchers were esoteric in nature, their order being formed entirely of those who never spoke or wrote of what they did, in this lies frustration for those who would see their exceeding secrecy from the outside. They were not naturally inclined to explanation, and in the case of Corberon's disagreements, their silence was not a sign of an exceeding abundance of disdain, but rather an exceeding abundance of tact. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 11, Page 6. And I can tell you now that this order has been named, that when I took the official Knight Radiant Order quiz on Brandon Sanderson's website, this was my number one order. I was a Truth Watcher followed by Windrunner.
Truth Watcher.
This chapter starts with Kaladin walking through the Shattered Plains at night on to the plateau where he encountered Wit a few weeks previously. So at the end of Way of Kings when he had the story time with Wit. It's been like a few weeks since then. Kaladin verifies that no one can see him, and then he steps off the plateau into a chasm. And we cut to Shallan. Shallan walks through Sadeas's war camp disguised as a messenger boy. Shallan enters Amaram's manor after passing a checkpoint guarded by Hav. Shallan waits for a maid and a man to leave the manor grounds, then changes her clothing in disguise to impersonate the maid. She uses a sketch she'd done of the woman earlier to change her own features and enters the manor. And we cut back to Kaladin. Kaladin hit the bottom of the chasm in a glowing storm of light. He took off at a jog. It was difficult to stand still with stormlight in his veins. Syl flew down as a ribbon of light and took up position beside his head, matching his speed. He tries to jump onto a wall but fails and lands on the ground. Syl convinces him to learn the fundamentals before trying to do what Zeth did, so he starts hopping on and off of the wall repeatedly from a standing position. And we cut back to Shallan. Shallan enters the kitchen, trying to imitate the maid's mannerisms. The cook addresses her and gives her tasks to do, and Shallan just nods without speaking so as to not blow her cover. Shallan almost runs into Amaram, who she thought wasn't going to be in his room, and panics. She follows Amaram toward the room she wants to enter. "Bright Lord Amaram," Shallan said. He turned toward her, frowning. "Talesh, weren't you going out tonight?" "I did, Bright Lord, but I came back." "Talesh," Amaram said, shaking his head, "you still can't choose between them? I promised your good father I'd see you cared for. How can I do that if you won't settle down?" "It's not that, Bright Lord," Shallan said quickly. "Have stopped a messenger on the perimeter coming for you. He sent me back to tell you."
"Messenger?" Amaram said. "From whom?"
"Have didn't say, Bright Lord. He seemed to think it was important, though."
"That man," Amaram said with a sigh. "He's too protective. He thinks he can keep a tight perimeter in this mess of a camp. Better see what it's about."
Shallan gave him a bow as he passed her by and trotted down the stairs. Shallan asks Pattern to pick the lock, and she enters the shuttered room, which turns out to be filled with maps.
And we jump back to Kaladin. Kaladin realizes he has to get over fear of injury and is able to jump on the wall without stumbling or falling and then back onto the floor. We cut back to Shallan. Shallan asks Pattern to act as lookout while she peruses the maps. She takes memories of the maps which focus on the Shattered Plains and are more detailed than any she had seen before. She also deciphers the handwritten Stormwarden glyphs, though she is puzzled by them as they aren't meant to form sentences. Parshendi, she translated, must know how to return the Voidbringers. What? Remove secret from them. Reach center before Alethi armies. She theorizes that Yasna, the Ghostbloods, and Amaram all were interested in the same things. She also realizes that she has to avoid alerting Amaram that his private room was infiltrated. She begins to sketch something on a sheet of paper she brought with. And we cut back to Kaladin. Kaladin becomes more comfortable in jumping between the ground and walls. He leaped over a large pool of water, but misjudged its size. He came down, about to splash into the shallow water. But by reflex, he looked upward and lashed himself toward the sky. For a brief moment, Kaladin stopped falling down and fell up instead. His momentum continued forward and he cleared the pool, then lashed himself downward again. He landed in a trot. I could lash myself upward, he thought, and fall into the sky forever. But no, that was how an ordinary person thought. A sky eel didn't fear falling, did it? A fish didn't fear drowning. Until he began thinking in a new way, he wouldn't control this gift he had been given. And it was a gift. He would embrace this. The sky was now his. Kaladin shouted, dashing forward. He leaped and lashed himself to the wall. No pausing, no hesitance, no fear. He hit it a dead run, and nearby, Syl laughed for joy. Kaladin jumped off the wall and looked directly above him at the opposite wall. He lashed himself in that direction and flung his body into a flip. He landed, going down on one knee upon what had been the ceiling to him a moment before. You did it, Syl said, flitting around him. What changed? I did. Well, yeah, but what about you? Syl asked. Everything. She frowned at him. He grinned back, then took off at a run along the side of the chasm. And we cut back to Shallan's POV. Shallan returns to the kitchen disguised as Amaram, using Pattern to imitate the Bright Lord's voice. She tells the cook that Talesh was on a secret mission for Amaram, and that the cook is to pretend that she knows nothing of where Talesh was and that evening, and to not mention this conversation to Amaram at any point. Shallan then leaves the manor and changes her guise back to that of the messenger boy, and returns to the front of the building as Hav and Amaram walk up. She says she has a message from Shallan Devar to request a time to sketch his shard blade, to which Amaram acquiesces. You came this late, Amaram asked, to ask such a simple question. Shallan shrugged. I don't question the commands of Light Eyes, High Lord, but my mistress, well, she can be distracted at times. I suppose she wanted me on her task while it was fresh in her mind, and she's really interested in shard blades. Who isn't, Amaram mused. They're wondrous things, aren't they? Was he talking to her or to himself? Shallan hesitated. A sword formed in his hand, mist coalescing, water beating on its surface. Amaram held it up, looking at himself in the reflection. Such beauty, he said. Such art. Why must we kill with our grandest creations? But I'm babbling, delaying you. I apologize. The blade is still new to me. I find excuses to summon it. Shallan was barely listening. A blade with the back edge ridged like flowing waves, or perhaps tongues of fire. Etchings all along its surface. Curved, sinuous. She knew this blade. It belonged to her brother, Helleran.
Oh.
Remember where Amaram got...
Against another... He was fighting against another High Prince. Wasn't he?
He was fighting another High Prince, but you remember... Where he got his... How he physically came into possession of his shard blade.
Kaladin killed the shard
bearer. Kaladin killed Shallan's brother.
Oh, God. Oh.
When I was rereading Way of Kings for the first season of the podcast, I was like, hi, Helleran. Bye, Helleran.
Oh! Is she gonna find this out? She's gonna find out that Kaladin killed her brother.
What was Helleran trying to kill Amaram?
He probably had a good freaking reason.
Because remember, Amaram was fighting another Alethi High Prince. He was having a border skirmish.
Yeah.
What was Helleran, a person from Yakaved, doing fighting Amaram there? And why was he seemingly targeting Amaram? Everybody's got a little bit of a secret that they're a part of.
Well, then he would have to know that Amram was hiding something. And Helleran was the one who ran off with other people, right?
Yeah, he just showed up one day with a shard blade, and Lynn was like, your new friends trust you with that?
Yeah, which means he's part of another secret society of people. That's probably not the Ghostbloods, but one of the other ones. And they're also, they're going after Amram for some reason.
And Amram is also being attacked by the Ghostbloods, which means Amram is not, you know, associated with the Ghostbloods. Well, we know that Amram is associated because when in the flashback, when we saw that he killed Kaladin's buddies, he says that Rastaris told him to do it. And Rastaris is a name that Gavilar name dropped when Zeth was about to kill him. He was like, Rastaris sent you, or Thydakar? So whoever Rastaris is another camp separate from the Ghostbloods or Helleran's camp. And Amram seems to be a part of that camp.
And so it's not that one. So then it's another one. You did mention that there are like 10 of them, so...
Yep. There are like 10 of them. I don't know if I know all 10, but Sanderson was asked once, and he said, yeah, there are 10. Kaladin charged through the chasm, and the wind joined him, blowing at his back. Sills soared before him as a ribbon of light. He reached a boulder in his way and jumped into the air, lashing himself upward. He soared a good 30 feet upward before lashing himself to the side and downward at the same time. The downward lashing slowed his momentum upward. The sideways lashing brought him to the wall. He dismissed the downward lashing and hit the wall with one hand, twisting and throwing himself to his feet. He kept running along the chasm wall. When he reached the end of the plateau, he leaped toward the next one and lashed himself at its wall instead. Faster. He held so much stormlight that he glowed like a bonfire. It encouraged him as he jumped and lashed himself forward, eastward. This made him fall through the chasm. The floor of the chasm whipped along beneath him. He had to remember that he was falling. This was not flight, and every second he moved, his speed increased. That didn't stop the feeling of liberty, of ultimate freedom. It just meant that this could be dangerous. The winds picked up, and he lashed himself backward at the last moment, slowing his descent as he crashed against a chasm wall before him. That direction was down to him now, so he stood and ran along it. He was using the stormlight at a furious rate. He lashed himself to the other chasm wall and crossed the chasm, landing on his hands. He threw himself back upward and somehow lashed himself only slightly in that direction. Now, much lighter, he was able to twist in the air and come down on his feet. He stood on the wall, facing down the chasm, hands and fists and light pouring off of him. Syl hesitated, fitting around him back and forth. What? She asked. More, he said, then lashed himself forward again, down the corridor. Fearless, he fell. This was his ocean to swim, his winds upon which to soar. He fell face first toward the next plateau. Just before he arrived, he lashed himself sideways and backward. His stomach lurched. The stormlight inside, however, made the discomfort negligible. He pulled sideways into another chasm. Lashing sent him eastward again down another corridor, and he wove around plateaus, keeping to the chasms. Onward. Faster. Still falling. Teeth clenched at both the wonder and the forces twisting him, he tossed caution aside and lashed himself upward. Once, twice, three times. He let go of all else, and amid the streaming light, he shot from the chasms out into the open air above. He lashed himself back to the east so that he could fall in that direction again, but now no plateau walls got in his way. He soared toward the horizon, distant, lost in the darkness. He gained speed, coat flapping, hair whipping behind him. Air buffeted his face and he narrowed his eyes, but did not close them. Beneath, dark chasms passed one after another. Plateau, pit, plateau, pit. What took Bridgman hours to cross, he passed in minutes. He felt as if something were boosting him from behind, the wind itself carrying him. Syl zipped along to his right. And to his left? No, those were other windspren. He'd accumulated dozens of them, flying around him as ribbons of light. He could pick out Syl. He didn't know how. She didn't look different, but he could tell. Syl and her cousins twisted around him in a spiral of light, free and loose, but with a hint of coordination. How long had it been since he felt this good, this triumphant, this alive? Not since before Tien's death. Even after saving Bridge 4, darkness had shadowed him. That evaporated. He saw a spire of rock ahead on the plateaus and nudged himself toward it with a careful lashing to the right. Other lashings to his rear slowed his fall enough that when he hit the tip of the spire of rock, he could clutch to it and spin around it, fingers on the smooth cremstone. A hundred windspren broke around him, like the crash of a wave, spraying outward from Kaladin in a fan of light. He grinned, then he looked upward toward the sky. And we cut back to Shallan.
That was awesome.
Kaladin's straight up flying.
Yep. Congrats, Kaladin. You're an anime character now.
Yeah, you've fully graduated to anime protagonist. Not quite yet. Almost. He'll be there soon. He's almost an anime protagonist.
You're in your senior year.
Yeah, you're about to graduate from My Hero Academia. Shallan's POV, again. Shallan requests the background of the shard blade, and Amaram lies and says he got it from a young Vaden man who tried to assassinate him, and she thinks that Amaram killed Helleran. She then takes her leave. She turned, trying not to stumble as she walked away. She finally knew what had happened to Helleran. You were involved in all of this, weren't you, Helleran? She thought, just like Father was. But how? Why? At least she knows that Helleran is dead. She can let go of that now. She knows he's not coming back.
Yeah.
It seemed that Amaram was trying to bring back the Voidbringers. Helleran had tried to kill him. But why would anyone really want to bring back the Voidbringers? Perhaps she was mistaken. The guards, blessedly, did not give her any further troubles as she slipped away from Amaram's camp. That was well, for if they'd looked closely, they'd have seen the messenger boy with tears in his eyes, crying for a brother that now, once and for all, Shallan knew was dead. And we cut back to Kaladin. Kaladin has a great moment, and Shallan, not so much.
Yeah.
Kaladin lashes himself over the plateaus and hovers in place, noticing a pattern in the plains beneath him. As he stays in the same place, the windspren leave him.
Hey, Sanderson, why do you keep saying that the shattered plains have a pattern to them, like something was dropped on them and broke them? Can you explain that at some point? I'd really like to know.
Anyways, that's just my own personal...
He refuses
to answer any questions about how the plateaus are the way that they are.
Well, allegedly they weren't always the plateau.
Yeah, so something must have happened to shatter them like that.
Something happened to shatter them like that. Allegedly, there's also a pathway to... what's it called?
Urithiru there. Whatever happened must have happened after... the recreants, because it was still whole before. Well, this place was a real place while the radiants ruled. So whatever happened to the Shattered Plains must have happened after they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyways, not many men ever see this view. I've been trying to get you to do this for a while now. It's like when I first picked up a spear, Kaladin whispered. I was just a child. Were you with me back then, all that time ago? No, Syl said. And yes, it can't be both. It can. I knew I needed to find you. And the winds knew you. They led me to you. So everything I've done, Kaladin said, my skill with the spear, the way I fight, that's not me, it's you. It's us. It's cheating. Unearned. Nonsense. You practice every day. I have an advantage. The advantage of talent, Syl said. Kaladin lashed himself westward, back toward the war camps. I'll take it, Kaladin said. Whatever it is that gives me that edge, I'll use it. I'll need it to beat him. Syl nodded, still sitting on his shoulder. You don't think he has a spren, Kaladin said, but how does he do what he does? The weapon, Syl said. It's something special. It was created to give abilities to men, much as our bond does. Kaladin nodded. Syl, how to broach this? I can't fight him without a shard blade. She looked the other way, squeezing her arms together, hugging herself. I've avoided the training with the blades that Zahel offers, Kaladin continued. It's hard to justify. I need to learn how to use one of those weapons. They're evil, she said in a small voice. Because they're symbols of the Knight's broken oaths, Kaladin said. But where did they come from in the first place? How were they forged? Syl didn't answer. Can a new one be forged? One that doesn't bear the stain of broken promises? Yes. How? She didn't reply. He landed down in the chasms and started to walk back to the camps. There's a question you're avoiding, Syl said. It's been 2 days. When are you going to tell Dalinar about those men that Moash took you to meet? He didn't listen when I told him about Amaram. This is obviously different, Syl said. It was, and she was right. So why hadn't he told Dalinar? Those men didn't seem the type who would wait long, Syl said. I'll do something about them. I just want to think about it some more. I don't want Moash to get caught in the storm when we bring them down. She fell silent as he walked the rest of the way. At the war camp's edge, he turned right and walked northward. Kaladin, Syl asked. Why are you walking this way? He looked up. This was the way toward Sadius's camp. Dalinar's camp was the other direction. Kaladin kept walking. Kaladin, what are you doing? Finally, he stopped in place. Amaram would be there, just inside. Just ahead, inside Sadeus's camp somewhere. It was late. I could end him, Kaladin said. Enter his window in a flash of stormlight, kill him, and be off before anyone has time to react. So easy. Everyone would blame it on the assassin in white. Kaladin, it's justice, Syl, he said, suddenly angry, turning toward her. You tell me that I need to protect. If I kill him, that's what I'm doing. Protecting people, keeping him from ruining them, like he ruined me. I don't like how you get, she said, seeming small, when you think about him. You stop being you. You stop thinking. Please. He killed Tien, Kaladin said. I will end him, Syl. But tonight? After what you just discovered? After what you just did? He took a deep breath, remembering the thrill of the chasms and the freedom of flight. He'd felt true joy for the first time in what seemed like ages. All right, he said, turning back toward Dalinar's camp. Not tonight. Evening stew was finished by the time Kaladin arrived back at the barracks. He stepped into his private room. Someone stirred in the room. Kaladin spun, leveling his spear. The light that streamed off of him revealed a red and black face. Shen looked disturbingly eerie in those shadows, like an evil spren from the stories.
Shen?
Kaladin said, lowering his spear. What in the... Sir, Shen said. I must leave. Kaladin frowned. I am sorry, Shen said. I cannot tell you why. You're a free man, Shen, Kaladin said. I won't keep you here if you feel you must go, but I don't know that there is another place you can go where you will be able to make good on your freedom. Shen nodded, then moved to walk past Kaladin. You're leaving tonight? Immediately. The guards at the edges of the plains might try to stop you. Shen shook his head. Parshmen do not flee captivity. They will see only a slave doing some assigned work. I will leave your spear beside the fire. He walked to the door, but then hesitated beside Kaladin, and placed a hand on his shoulder. You are a good man, Captain. I have learned much. My name is not Shen. It is Relaine. May the winds treat you well, Relaine. The winds are not what I fear, Relaine said. He patted Kaladin's shoulder, then took a deep breath as if anticipating something difficult, and stepped from the chamber. And that is where we will leave off from tonight, or for tonight, with me being able to call him Relaine, finally.
Aw. Is he... Oh.
What's up?
He's leaving because he knows what's going to happen and he doesn't want to be used inside the camps.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you remember what Esher and I said about when we first met Esher and I in the war in her interlude? She talked about the different forms and what they were used for.
Yeah.
And she mentioned that one of the forms was used to spy in the war camps.
Yeah.
Relaine, the listener.
So he wasn't actually a slave. He was a spy.
I mean, he was still a slave, but
he was being used could have as gotten a spy. Out.
Yeah, yeah. He was acting as a spy and allowing himself to be a slave.
He wasn't dull form.
No.
He was spy form.
Yeah, I think he was dull form. It's slave form that the normal parchmen are. Dull form is like slave form, but not exactly.
But why were why were the other listeners dull form when they didn't want to do anything rather than when they were being spied?
I think dull form is just the closest to and the ones that were becoming dull form that Esh and I passed were there because they thought the Alethi were gonna come and that they would think that they were just parchmen. Because they look very similar in dull form. And they would... And then they would be able to just be picked up and taken as slaves and spared.
Okay.
What has happened with the Parshmen is slightly different. We will talk about that eventually. But yes, Kaladin flew! Shallan's brother was killed by Kaladin. And Shen was actually a listener named Relaine. And he has left. He has gone off to do something.
To tell people about... report on his spy findings. And probably tell them to not kill Kaladin.
Probably show up and be like, hey, why are your guys' eyes glowing red?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, what happened? Hey, I was gone for like a couple months. You know, what's going on?
Hey, if you're gonna kill people, don't kill him.
Maybe don't.
Don't
here.
Don't kill
the
this
one
guy.
That looks really sad and really emo. Not him. The rest of them... Sorry, he looks at me and goes, sorry, Teft. The rest of them you can kill. He's like, sorry, Rock, sorry, Teft, sorry, Sigzel, sorry, everybody else, but sorry, just Lopin. Not Kaladin. Sorry, Lopin, sorry, Huio, sorry, all the other Hadazians who are just showing up and joining Bridge 4.
Yeah, well, what's-his-face isn't gonna die, so...
Who?
I forgot his this world
Hoid?
Vasher.
Oh, Vasher, Vasher.
He's not gonna die.
Yeah, well, I mean, he could.
Wasn't it essentially established that only Returned can kill other Returned? Or, no, actually, no, because Lush Weaver was killed by normal people.
They believed that they could not be killed. And then Blushweaver got fucking stabbed brutally at the end.
Never mind.
It was all a lie.
But yeah, no, Vasher could not. He's not gonna die.
But he's Vasher. He's not gonna get taken out by a couple of fucking punk Rosharans.
He literally created an entire army of zombie fighters. Yeah. So
they're gonna fucking enter the Light Eye training ground, and he's just gonna be sitting in the sand, fucking meditating. And he's gonna be like, "I've been waiting for you." And then he's gonna fucking stand up. And he's gonna grow fucking 6 times larger as he becomes his Returned form. And just start beating them to death with themselves or something. He's gonna like grab their clothes and make them strangle themselves or something. Because he can do that.
Yeah. Does he do anything like that in this?
Not in this book.
Not in this book, but in the other books. Okay.
Eventually, we're gonna get to a point where Sanderson... And this is something that he said, like, it's going to get even more like this, but Sanderson is like, look, if you're not keeping up, like, I'm not going to hold back as much as I used to. And so
you're not going to know what the heck is going on.
You're still going to be able to follow the main plot of the Stormlight Archive, but like, there's going to be a whole scene where Vasher is fucking making inanimate objects come to life. And you're going to be like, fucking what? And I read that scene and was very confused because I did not read Warbreaker before I read this book. I read this book first.
And then you read Warbreaker and you were like, oh.
And I was like, oh, that makes sense. But Sanderson said that after the last Wax and Wane books, the last Mistborn Era 2 book, and after Stormlight 5, he has to have a conversation with the fans about the future of the Cosmere, which is that... if you're not reading Mistborn, but you're reading Stormlight, you should probably start reading Mistborn. If you're not reading Stormlight, but you're reading Mistborn, you should probably start reading Stormlight. You know, like that kind of, it's becoming even more of an interconnected universe.
You're not going to get any further and understand what's going on and be fully fulfilled.
Yeah.
If you don't read both.
Yeah. If, but before they were little nuggets on top, like Vasher is still a cool character in this book. Like Zahel is still a cool character, even if you don't know that he's like a fucking god from another planet or whatever.
Yeah.
But like when you know that, it adds to it, but there's stuff in like I'm thinking of Rhythm of War specifically, which I've kept telling you is like, if you don't read Mistborn before Rhythm of War, there's just going to be places where it's evident that you're missing something. And it's not super important. Like, you're still... The main story of the Stormlight Archive in that book is still fully comprehensible if you didn't read Mistborn. But people are going to be saying things, and you're going to be like, I know that that is supposed to mean something because it's too weird to not mean something, but I can't figure out what it means because I haven't read Mistborn. And he said that part of the reason that he can do this is he always wanted to do this, but he's been afraid to. But with how the MCU has become... Like, people are really digging that interconnectivity in the MCU, and people have started to come to his books for that as well. He feels like he can start to embrace it a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
which I'm excited for. Anyways, we have 2 more episodes left in this part. Next week is one of my favorite wit scenes. One of my favorite wit lines is next week. And then the week after that is one of the greatest moments in the entirety of the series.
Wait, next episode is the end of part 3?
No, week after that will be the end of part 3. But next week should probably be a little bit shorter. This week would have been a little bit shorter, but we went on a lot of tangents.
Yeah, we did. Half of those will get cut out. But
they will, yes. But yes. All right, that's all I've got. As always... You guys can, you know, follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. You guys can email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. You guys can follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Our Discord server, the link to join that is in the episode description, and also the pinned tweet on our Twitter account. And our cover art was made by our good friend Alex. That's at ALX_BEEGBOI on Twitter, ALX_BigBoy. And the link to his Twitter account is also in the episode description.
Life before death. Strength before weakness, journey before destination.